This is Deku. Thank you for joining the TangoCast Plus Ultra!
Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 56 of the TangleCast, the official podcast of Beneath the Tangles. Of our two podcasting teams, you happen to have stumbled into the ever-lively hustle and bustle of Camp Anime, or as we otherwise anglicize it, Team Anchester, where we strive to bring you critical analysis of Japanese cartoons because somebody's got to do it, and it might as well be us. And by we strive, I sort of just mean I and whoever else I can periodically wrangle onto the show, but it is equally true of all of us in Beneath the Tangle's motley staff that we desire to see the Christian faith and anime connected in open community. And I am so very glad that you joined us today in that venture. I've got what I think will be an interesting show for you about superheroes and where the idea of them originates. For more than just one reason, it's actually a pretty timely topic, or at least as timely as I could make it, given our Tuesday release dates. Avengers Endgame is already out and raking in the moolah, as no one doubted it would, so it might have been more timely to have done this in advance of the debut, but here we are nevertheless, and I am undeterred in my excitement to share this topic with you anyway, as I think the point that I'm making today is an important one. And come on, let's be real. It's not like Disney isn't planning to milk this superhero thing till it can be milked no more. So the relevancy card is still good if you factor in the long game. But before we get to all that, let's take a look at your responses to the cast question from last episode. Last episode was about Code Geass and what I thought about it as a series, the moral it seemed to give to its story, and whether that moral made it a good story. Then I turned the camera on you all and asked what you thought of the series. I also opened the floor to anyone who knew anything about the coming movie, Code Geass, Lelouch of the Resurrection, and whether they could vouch for it. On Instagram, Justin Sayana said that he loved the storyline, character development, the struggle, the highs, the lows, the blend of politics, culture, and morality, and strategy, as well as the mech fights. The oh-so-delicious mech fights. Tsukoshi Kuneko said that Code Geass has been one of her favorites for years and carries a kind of bittersweet nostalgia because it reminds her of her teens. Waifu AK said definitively that Code Geass is one of the best anime. Hard to argue with that confidence. I mean, come on. We also had K Waka Flocka 27, great name, said that he, like Koneko, saw it for the first time when he was much younger. He thought the story was pretty good with decent twists, characters who didn't feel too plot armored, and also felt pretty well developed, too. At Kokorodaki said that Code Geass was one of those shows he dropped because of the fan service and occasional nudity, but that he enjoyed the series up until the point of dropping it. We also had a response from at Hello Happy Crafts, who commented that she watched it for the first time last year and honestly thought the series was a hot mess, but that she was also thoroughly entertained by it and planned to watch it again in the future. And finally, but certainly not least appreciated, I received a lengthy comment from a listener named Silas, who disagreed with my judgment of Code Geass and also seemed to have some insight into Lelouch of the Resurrection. And while his response to me was too long to include here, unfortunately, the part he mentioned about the movie was very encouraging. He said that Lelouch in the new movie is in effect a changed man, and that, in his opinion, the change in character actually makes sense and flows logically in a believable way within the context that the series gives at the conclusion of the original story. He even said that he believes the movie might succeed as a standalone experience for first-time viewers, though the viewer just coming in might not understand the full significance of the change that's taking place. So I don't know where Silas got his sources, but if he's listening to this, I want him to know that I think he's actually persuaded me to give the movie a shot. I was pretty convinced coming out of the series that the way it ended was the full statement it wanted to make, but I'm also quite a sucker for the hope of that heart change. So to see Lelouch maybe come through, pull through for me, I just might go see it. Thank you all for responding to our cast questions. We appreciate the feedback and interaction, and if you too would like to give your two cents with the prospect of hearing them clink at the bottom of the bucket next episode, I'll be asking another cast question at the end of this podcast for your responsive pleasure. But for now, we move on to the main course on the topic of superheroism. Superheroism? Yeah, that's the word. Superheroism. And all such stuff. So, let's go! To get some perspective on superheroes, we're going to need to go a ways back, and then a ways further, for an even greater grasp of this subject. There's an article which was written in 2016 by Nirit Anderman called Supermensches, Comic Books' Secret Jewish History, which I highly recommend reading and which serves as my primary text for today. There are also some excellent text sources and authorities on this subject, which she cites in the article for further reading if you happen to be interested by what I have to say today. But let's go back for now to almost a century ago, to the 1930s, where unfortunately there was significant antisemitism present in the U.S. publishing industry, which prevented Jews from branching out into established fields within the discipline. But rather than lock down Jewish creatives, these limitations inspired an alcove of Jewish creators in the comic industry. The very idea of the comic book was pioneered in the 30s by a man named Maxwell Ginsburg, and a community of fellow Jews rose up around him and took after his lead in the dawn of the comic book. Compared to the established prestige of the written word, graphic form literature was considered a lesser medium, and therefore easier to access and develop influence within. Now, those in the manga scene have proposed that the creation of manga runs as far back as the Edo period. Others are even willing to suggest the 12th or 13th centuries, but rather than bring clarity to the conversation we'll have today about where comics started, it really will just serve to complicate things further, forcing us to draw an arbitrary line between what really would be a simple definition as depicted narratives, which could go as far back as the French caves of Lascaux, if that's our definition, all the way up to the whenever the first time someone wore a cape and tights, or was drawn with manga doe eyes. And so I don't think that's really going to be fruitful. I think such arguments will ultimately be unproductive without a proper set of definitional constraints. So just assume that when I say comic books, I am talking specifically about the American phenomenon that arrived in the late 20th century. So here we are in the 1930s, where the idea of the comic book superhero springs from the heads of two Jewish high school boys from Ohio, Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. They were the ones to create the character of Superman before they had even graduated high school. Then, Joe Simon and Jacob Kurtzberg created Captain America. Then, Robert Kahn and Bill Finger invented Batman. Then, Jacob Kurtzberg joined forces with Stanley Martin Lieber, or as you might know him, Stan Lee, to create Spider-Man, the Hulk, the Fantastic Four, Iron Man, Thor, and the rest of the Avengers, which you can go see this week in Avengers Endgame. And this is not to say that all popular superheroes were created by a person of Jewish descent, but these big names certainly were, and on both sides of the DC-Marvel divide. And as many scholars have noted, this is no coincidence. The idea of the superhero sprang from Jewish soil long before Superman was springing over giant buildings in a single bound. And the idea of the Avenger was a cry of the Jewish people long before Thanos snapped his blocky purple fingers. Many scholars point to the folktale concept of the Golem as the Jewish superhero archetype. Though not the only example, the most popular iteration of Golem lore is the Golem of Prague, in which a rabbi uses a heavy dose of Jewish mysticism to imitate God's creation of man and create a golem in human likeness from the earth. The substance from which he is made grants the golem a degree of invulnerability and superhuman strength. The golem then goes about defending and avenging the local Jews from those who issue false accusations and witch hunts against the Jews simply because of their ethnicity. It's a compelling similarity to modern superheroes, for sure, but those of us familiar enough with the Old Testament to recognize similar patterns don't have to halt the timeline at a 16th century folktale. The story of hope for deliverance in the arms of a future Messiah is a tale as old as tales themselves, and that is abundantly clear to anyone paying close enough attention to the influence for the story of Superman. Knowing now the Jewish origins and Jewish creators responsible for superhero comics, consider the story of Superman. He was born to a people in a time of crisis, placed in a vehicle and sent out on the slim chance that he might survive the journey, was found and raised by a foreign people, taking on their name and their customs until coming of age and to the realization of his past and his people. He even discovers that his Kryptonian name, as some who've tried translating the name suggest, means the voice or the mouthpiece of God. And upon this discovery of his past, he embraces his heritage and uses his power to protect those being oppressed. Sounds kind of like Moses if you think about it, right? And that's exactly what Siegel and Shuster were drawing upon when creating the character of Superman. Even if this wasn't previously known to you, it has been widely known as the inspiration for the iconic character created by those two high school boys in 1930s Ohio. And that only happened because of the Old Testament leaf mold in which they were formed as children. Now, by this point, you've probably asked a fair question that, in my haste, I've blazed right past. Why exactly are we talking about superheroes and comic books in a podcast about anime? Fair question. Well, the success of series like My Hero Academia and One Punch Man are, at this point, really all the argument you need for the effect of the superhero on the medium of anime, and, in reality, that effect began long before these two most recent, most popular examples. But the answer of why is, as usual, for partly selfish and partly contemporary reasons. You see, not only has Avengers Endgame come out over the past couple of days, but over the course of Holy Week, I personally had the opportunity to attend a Seder, or Passover meal, during which I was repeatedly reminded of this relationship between superheroes and their Old Testament inspirations, and then was sharply reminded of its relevance to the series My Hero Academia. The Seder is a yearly traditional meal held in remembrance of Israel's deliverance by God from the slavery of the Egyptians. It's a big deal, and would have been a significant part of the childhood experience, or at the very least, the atmosphere of Siegel and Shuster's upbringing, no matter how traditionally or culturally Jewish their upbringing might have been. And because of the structure of the Seder and the importance it places on incorporating the younger generation, these two boys would have likely been directly involved in the ceremony and not just passive spectators. Unless you begin to think that this is a culturally specific event, let me remind you that it is as central to the Christian faith as it is to the Jewish faith. Secondly, that Jesus celebrated Passover and that the Last Supper was a Seder meal. And thirdly and finally, the Seder acts as the primary landmark by which we Christians place the death and resurrection of Jesus in time. In other words, Passover is what gives significance and context to the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Now, there are many stages and steps in the ceremonial Seder meal. Each step means something. Each portion of food means something. And the questions raised at each stop are meant to reinforce the significance of each point. But rather than do a rundown of each part of the Seder meal, I'd like to focus in on one part particularly. And I would encourage you to attend a Seder meal next year if you have the opportunity and the ability. It's wonderful, and I believe, as a Christian, there's not really any way you could be disappointed with the experience, and I highly recommend it. But back to the one step in particular that I mentioned from the meal, that step is called the Zafun, which is the last step in the meal portion of the ceremony. Near the beginning of the meal, there is a plate with three pieces of matzah, or unleavened bread, which the leader of the meal takes up. This stack is sometimes called the Unity, because in some tradition, it represents the division and diaspora of the Jewish people among the nations. The leader takes the middle piece of the three-piece stack out of that stack and then breaks it in half. He takes the smaller half and places it back in the middle of the stack, and the larger half becomes the part of the meal referred to as the afikomen, or the dessert, which is the last piece of food to be eaten during the zafun. I know I'm using a lot of foreign words and no doubt butchering them, but just bear with me. The significance of the afikomen is that it represents the Passover sacrifice made by the families of Israel at the end of their captivity, which not only served as the food for the first Passover meal, but whose blood was used to mark the door frame of each Jewish household so that the angel of death, when he came upon Egypt, would spare those in Jewish homes. So in a sense, the afikomen, in that it represents the Passover lamb, is representative of life itself, representative of deliverance and protection. But because the afikomen is taken from among the unity, that stack of matzah, the afikomen also represents God's promise to draw his people back to himself, finally restored and at peace, a promise which attendees of the Seder literally internalize when they eat the afikomen as the last piece of the meal. The consumption of the afikomen is therefore a celebration of God's fulfillment of his promises to his people in the past, and also a desirous crying out for God to fulfill his promises for his people in the future. But the thing which tied this back to anime for me was the name afikomen. As I said, tradition states that the name afikomen means simply dessert. But some scholars believe that the word finds its root in another Hebrew word that means I have come, or I am here. And for those of you not tracking with me, let me put it in another way that you might understand. The afikomen has a suggested Hebrew meaning of I am here. The afikomen is essentially God's way of saying everything will be all right.
Nasete watashi ga kita.
So you can see how I might have chuckled to myself and gotten goosebumps during this ceremonial meal. The leader of our Seder read the following portion of his script for the Zafun step of our meal. Quote, the psalmist wrote, sacrifice and offering you did not desire, but my ears you have pierced. Burnt offerings and sin offerings you did not require. Then I said, here I am, I have come. It is written about me in the scroll. I desire to do your will, O my God. Your law is within my heart. The one who came, written about in the scroll, is our Messiah, the Lord Jesus. It is written of him, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. It is further written, the Word became flesh and lived for a while among us. We have seen his glory, the glory as of the one and only Son, who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. John 1:14. Concerning the afikomen, it is written, and he took bread, gave thanks, and broke it, and gave it to them, saying, this is my body, given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. Luke 22:19. And of course, this deliberate pointing of the messianic language to Jesus Christ specifically is something that we did as a Christian gathering because that's what we believe. A traditional Jewish Seder would not make such distinctions. However, for Christians, the afikomen is the part of the meal that we celebrate regularly in our church services. We call it communion, the Lord's Supper, or the Eucharist. It's the part of the meal about which Jesus said, this is my body, and this is my blood, and it carries the same significance as its role in the Seder, in that we celebrate and await a promise made to us. We proclaim the Lord's death until he returns. I hope you can see how this kind of energy, the spirit of this meal, inspired the messianic ideal of the comic book superhero. the image and the hope of a deliverer. It was there. It was there in Moses, there in Samson and the other judges, promised by the prophets, found in Jesus Christ, and to my surprise, made tribute to and everyone's favorite superhero anime dad, All Might. The creators of My Hero Academia did real justice to the Western idea of the superhero, and in doing so, assumed a narrative vocabulary of Judeo-Christian origins. From All Might's self-sacrificial character, to his catchphrase, to the name of his power, One for All, to the fact that his power is something he wills to other people through the vehicle of his own DNA, calling them to become his disciple and eat of his body, in this case, a hair. And I know that I'm blazing through these examples and kind of just hoping that you'll pick up on the significance in comparison, but I really hope you see that it all just inevitably seeps in. And it is glorious to see it played out over the span of millennia and across cultures, and now in a Japanese cartoon paying homage to men in tights in superhero outfits, who we have looked up to both in the past, starting in the 1930s, and before that, of course, and even now as we go to movies and celebrate them very similarly to Deku. And it's all there, once you know where to look. All right, that's a wrap on that. I hope you enjoyed it and followed the train of thought. This week's cast question is, what is your favorite part of My Hero Academia so far? I know that the manga goes farther than the anime has gone at this point, so of course, no spoilers, guys. But what is your favorite part of My Hero Academia, the anime, so far? It could be a scene, it could be a specific line, it could be a character, it could be something that made you laugh, or something serious. Boku no Hero Academia is a famously memeable series, and I have both a favorite serious part and a favorite funny part, so both or either are welcomed in your responses. And you'll be able to find the questions posted on Twitter, at Anime Tangles, on Instagram, at Anime Pop Heart, that's Anime Pop Heart. You'll also find us on Facebook as Beneath the Tangles, and of course at our home blog site, beneaththetangles.com, where you can find this podcast as well as other relevant links and articles. And while you're at it, giving all of your thoughtful and welcomed responses on our various platforms, please do like and share our podcast with anyone and everyone you know who might be interested in the kind of content that we produce here. And if you have that ever so common problem of an overwhelming love for the Tanglecast, we now have a scratch for that itch. You can subscribe to the Tanglecast or on our iTunes page or any of the various other services on which our podcast can be found, before dropping down into that comment review section and letting loose that affection in the form of a glowing review. All of these things will add up and help us grow as a podcast to reach more people just like you. So we appreciate the love that you can spare. Thank you again for stopping by for this episode of Team Anchester on the Tanglecast. I now send you out into the rest of your week with the charge to savor your dessert, your afikoman, and the God who is here. See you next time on the Tanglecast.